It is a work session, and so I do not bang the gavel for work sessions. I know, it's here and everything, just teasing me. Good afternoon. This is our first of three budget work sessions for fiscal year 26 for the City of Columbia. I believe today's presentation is on our general fund. As a reminder, we're doing three of these. Today's is over the general fund. On Wednesday, we'll do one over our enterprise funds, and then on Saturday morning, regretfully agreed to do a Saturday morning one. We'll be doing kind of the recap of all of the conversations had. So thank you all for being here. I see a lot of city staff. Thank you all. Sorry about Saturday. And I'll kick this over to Matthew Liu or DeCarlin. I don't know. Whoever. DeCarlin, you want to go first?
Sure. And so ideally what we'd like to do is we're trying to be a little bit more communicative of exactly what's in our budget, how our budget is situated, and how our budget is established. So it's part of the conversation of really getting people to understand our budget process. So we'll start off with the general fund discussion. Wednesday, we'll talk about our enterprise. And then we'll get back on Saturday to kind of talk about, I know Saturday budget meeting's a little much, but that's okay. It'll allow us to better understand our budget process, understand our budget priorities, so we're all moving on the same direction. And so with that, I'll let Matt Liu talk about our general fund.
So we want to make this more of a conversation with you all to get your input on things within the budget, even though the general fund is well, you'll see as we go along. So we will have some educational pieces along with the actual budget for the general fund. So I wanted to kind of start off with our budget philosophies. And this is something that we get a lot and that we try to explain to people as well. State and Fed budget philosophies sort of give municipalities, wouldn't say a bad name, but they give us a rep, kind of mix us in that same bag. And one of the issues is that in the state and the Fed, they have a use it or lose it type of budgeting that they do. So at the end of the year, end of the fiscal year, it lends itself to spending sprees, to purchase items, to basically use up that budget, because if they don't, they will lose that money. That is something that we do not do. We don't take part in that type of budgeting. Everything within our budget is budgeted within a fund. And so at the end of the year, if that money is not spent within that fund, it goes back into the fund to be spent for another fiscal year. And so it's not a use it or lose it, it's a use it, if you don't use it now, you can use it later, more of that type of mentality.
Betsy has a question.
Yes.
Yes, so how many years, I mean, this sounds like what you're doing is you're rolling forward funds.
Right.
To the next year, which is fine, within reason, but at what point do you look at that and say, I guess we over budgeted a lot for the last 5 years and now we have an extra million in that account? I mean, do you then not, what do you do with that then?
So that's something that we've been looking at. And so when I got here, we really had that issue when we had that $50 million above the required reserve. And so what we've done is did better of tightening those budgets, only putting in the budget what we expect to spend. And then we're trying to get to a place where when we need to spend more money, we come with amendments to make those budgets actually match. So this is something that we had issues with in the past, but I think we've done a lot better job at that. We've used a lot of that over the required reserve amount to purchase things like vehicles. Last year, we spent $5 million to purchase vehicles. A lot of other one-time type expenses.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Nick.
I wonder if some funds are done this way and others are not. For instance, that personnel, that's not true in personnel, I'm guessing.
I mean,
that would go into reserves. The general reserves, correct?
It depends on what fund
you're talking about. Right, right. Which so one? But for instance, if we had funds left over in fire, that would go into general reserves, correct?
Yes, because they are a general fund department.
Okay, thanks.
So kind of continuing on the fund accounting, the city has five different types of funds, and general fund, enterprise funds, internal service funds, special revenue funds, and debt service funds. And so today we are here for the general fund and specifically. So the general fund is one of the largest funds, and it is what you typically think of when you think of a municipality or local government. It's your police, your fire, your health, things of that nature. And because it has so many of those different departments in it, it doesn't have the same restrictions as some other funds, like enterprise funds, which can only be spent on that enterprise that they are generated for. Like with any fund within our municipality, the general fund is mostly personnel, and that's because we are a service-based organization. And the largest functional group within the general fund is public safety, which includes police, fire, and municipal courts. So here are our fund departments and divisions. You have administrative, health and environment, which is, it's a kind of a weird mix of departments, but it's basically all your public health, public housing type funds. You have public safety, supporting activities, and then transportation, which is basically public works. So here's the outlook for our general fund. You have 23 actuals through the proposed 26 budget. And if you notice with the revenue and the expenditures, there's a 19% increase in revenue over that time period. And a lot of that increase was due to ARPA funding. But over that same time period, we've seen expenditures increase 29% from 105 million to 136 million. And a lot of that has to do with the class and comp that we undertook a few years ago, where we seen a recognized expense increase of around $10 million in the general fund alone. So this year's budget is about $3.5 million over what we expect to bring in. And so we would be using some of that reserve above the target to make that budget balance.
Can I ask Matthew two questions on that? One, and this might be a question later on for HR. We did the class and comp. We changed the philosophy because we were seeing so many vacancies within our professional staff. So it'd be good to kind of know what have been the trade-offs then, like what have we decreased in our vacancy rate and turnover and some of those questions, just to know, was the investment, is it working? And then my second question is, last year we projected, and this might be a deep question, we projected to bring in more sales tax than we have realized. And so wanting to kind of know about like the confidence of our expected revenue for this year. It does have us projected as coming in more than fiscal year 25's projected. And so wondering, what change maybe, or what sort of considerations are we taking into play based on not realizing what we thought we were going to get this fiscal year?
Come back to when my turns come.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a few slides based on revenue and projections and things like that. But to sort of answer your question about the employees and what the class and comp had, what we've seen with the budget is that we went from worrying about positions that were vacant and how do we fund or how do we budget for positions that are vacant to basically looking at full staff. We have very little vacancies in the general fund now compared to 2023 when we implemented. And so I think we all knew that there would come a time where we would be more fully staffed than we were then, and there would be a price tag with that, but I think it came way earlier than any of us could have expected.
Okay. If I can ask DeCarlin for Saturdays when we're kind of wrapping up the things, I think to see some of those numbers when we talk about fiscal year 22 or 23 compared to 25 and 26, where we're seeing those numbers would be useful to see. Don, you had a question.
Yes, what did you say the projected shortfall was for fiscal year 25?
Right now we have it at a little under $1 million.
Okay, I misheard you. I thought you said two.
No, that's for 26. We're at 3.5.
25 general fund is 200,000 around, just general fund for the 25 shortfall. Okay. Yes, I think I'll mention that. I think now the picture of sales tax is better, what we presented last time.
Like we have a more lot, sales tax coming in?
The sales tax, it's not coming in more, but it's coming in about at par of what we brought in last year. And so that's better than what it had been. We're hoping that it increases in the next few months as well, which will put us in an even better position. But I think a lot of your department directors did a good job of making cuts this year that we've taken into fiscal year 26. And so that helped a lot with those expenditure numbers that we presumed we would have, but basically cut that down a lot.
And I think, DeCarlin, that might be good information too for Saturday, just to kind of like what sort of things have we done for savings, just because that's one of the conversations people have is, you know, are you reducing expenditures? Are you reducing, you know, your spending to make sure? And so I think to show that, yes, they have been.
Yeah, I think when we get to there's a PowerPoint slide that kind of shows the outlay of the general fund, and you can see where cuts were made. And so we can have a little bit more conversation on that.
I think just to highlight it, because this is a conversation we had back at the budget work session in February as well.
Yeah, don't know. We did a really good job of cutting down a lot of expenses. Now, there's a saying that, you know, you trimming the fat, but we may have got a little more than fat. our budget has really decreased when you look at everything outside of personnel. Okay, so the city's, this is sort of where all of our revenue comes from. And so we receive revenue from a variety of different sources, but the main source for the general fund is sales tax revenue at about 25%. And if you add in use tax, you're looking at about 30% of all of the revenue.
Oh, yeah. So, like Matthew said, that's a breakdown of our sales tax revenues. 30% is sales and use. If you were to add property tax and other local taxes, that's almost 50%. So 50% of the general fund's revenue comes from some sort of a local tax of some sort or another. So the vast, you know, no other pool of revenues comes close to that section. And then the next slide.
I would like to point out the intergovernmental revenue, because intergovernmental revenue is basically revenue that is more offsets for the work that is done by a general fund department, because the general fund has most of your administrative departments within it. And so we'll key in a little bit later on some of those, some definitions and things like that. So you all can see what we're talking about.
Yeah, we've got Don, and then Betsy, did you have your hand up? Okay, Don.
Mine's real tax rate, 7.975. We get 2%. Just where does the other 5.9 go?
State and county.
State and county, okay. That's what I thought, but I just wanted to confirm that. Thank you.
County, I believe, is at 4%, and I think the state's at 2, somewhere around there.
The opposite. But
opposite.
Yeah, state gets about 4%, and county gets about 2.
Okay. And we have a slide for Saturday on these two.
Betsy.
And then you might discuss this on another slide, but your intergovernmental revenue.
Yes.
What, where does that come from?
It comes from various other funds.
Like we pay one department and then they turn around and they pay the intergovernmental revenue in a different department here within the city, or?
What do you mean we pay one department?
So for instance, right now we have an IT department. IT department does IT work for a utility, for electric.
Okay.
And so the electric fund would pay an intergovernmental fee for the IT work to the general fund, because IT is in the general fund.
No, IT is in his own.
What about if the law office does IT stuff?
Yeah, replace IT with law, with what you just said.
Yeah. So we do have slides to kind of talk through this, though, at the later on in the slideshow.
I'll just wait for the more slides then. Okay. Thanks.
So for fiscal year 26, this is what our revenue looks like, our projected revenue looks like. Again, sales and use tax together make up about 38%. $38 million, around 30% of the total general fund revenue, followed by payments in lieu of taxes and intergovernmental revenue, intragovernmental revenue.
So I hate to ask this again, but other local taxes, what are those?
That would be like your marijuana sales tax falls into that.
We have a slide on that, just a couple of...
Okay, now I'll quit asking questions and let you get to your slides.
Go ahead.
Okay, so here's sort of a historical look of the general fund history.
So I think this slide actually answers some of your questions. See, on the beginning history, 2020, 21, 22, and even 23, you see the black line is above the expenditure. That's where we start kind of accumulating our fund. And then as it's not, we don't spend everything, so we accumulate, and then we, since our new administration started, we start lowering our fund balance and funding a lot of more projects. For example, when you see the 24, we have a new fire station. And then we have $5 million for the vehicle replacement fund we had, and then some of the ARPA related expenses also. And an increase from 23 to 24 is mostly we start reconciling the ARPA money, and then we got around like 10 like overall 6 to 10% of increase in the sales and use tax too. So. And on 2025, you see that it's our expected revenue and expenditure is on top of each other.
Does this include the savings or the reductions that staff have put in? So
yes.
This does include that?
Yes.
Okay.
And we call it like fund balance from one year to another year. And this is my kind of conventional slides, property tax forecast. You probably all know by now is most stable, steady tax. It's very easy to forecast. We have the houses. It's around 11 million, and I do it by 1% population increase every year. So it's growing on that rate. And I think this is the most challenging, or I think the mayor asked that. So I always do three because it is hard to forecast our 1 year ahead. So sometimes we take the middle one, sometimes we take the high one, or sometimes and the low. Last year, I think if I remember, we took the middle one, still we end up having not that far. And this year, we took the high one because, as you can see, we put asterisk. We are not doing that another. What is the 0.2%?
The 0.2 of the 1% general fund sales taxes that goes to the public improvement sales tax. In order for us to better balance the budget this year, we pulled that part back to include it in the general fund.
Can you repeat what you just said, Matthew?
So normally there was a 2%, 2% of the 1% went to public improvement sales, or went to public improvement fund. And so this year, in order to balance, or to better balance, but get closer than we are, we pulled that back in order to be able to fund some of the priorities that the council had.
Okay, and that was...
So when you asked the question about some of the things we did in order to try to balance the budget,
right,
that's one aspect of it. And so instead of setting funds aside in a public improvements fund, we actually put that back into the general
fund. It's kind of like an internal grant program.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's what it was. It was an internal fund that was created several years ago from, it was probably when Ray Beck was city manager,
yeah,
but it was a way to actually fund some projects.
Right. And then just to, I've got Valerie and Don both had their fingers up as well, but I just wanted to ask Deep, did you say that going forward we're going with the high?
This year we are expecting, next year we'll increase the sales tax by around 3%, because this is a little odd year.
But that is based on including the public.
Okay, yeah, that is based on that, because we did the public transfer fund, yeah, also in combined both of them this year.
So basically, over the past few years, the general fund received 98% of the sales tax that was allotted for the general fund,
right,
and then that other 2% went in. When you add that 2% back into the general fund, it does help that increase. It makes the increase look a little higher than it should be, because you're adding a portion that was not included before.
Yeah, so overall, though, it's about a 1% increase for sales tax is what we're forecasting for sales tax overall. General fund is getting, the general fund increases more because of that additional amount we're putting in that traditionally was going into public improvement fund. So that's kind of why you're seeing a higher growth in general fund. But as far as sales tax projections overall, we're at about 1% is what we're at.
Okay. And to clarify, you're saying that for next year, for fiscal year 26, we're assuming that we're going to have that additional 2% that's coming in.
Yes.
What would trigger a correction of that as far as suggesting, again, maybe let's not put this into the public improvement fund?
I think we're going to look at it a year-by-year basis. So in 27, when we're doing the budget for 27, we're going to see how our revenues are looking and whether or not to put that back into public improvement fund or not. So it's going to be on a year-by-year basis is kind of how we're projecting that.
Okay. Yeah, I think something that would be useful for Saturday, too, are those examples that you have, or what the public improvement fund, what are some of the example of projects that went towards that?
Yeah, we can have a slide for the public improvement fund so you can sort of see what's going on there as well.
Okay.
But, I mean, the way that we are growing with our employees and the goal of being the a top employer, that, I mean, it doesn't look good the way we're going right now.
Okay.
Because those expenses are increasing faster than the revenue is increasing.
Right. All right, so I've got Valerie had a question, and then Don, you had your hand up as well.
Yeah, this may be in a future slide you mentioned. What I'm trying to understand is, since we're putting the percentage that used to go to the public improvement fund, what I want to understand is what's the impact of that decision, what kind of projects used to be funded from that, if we had any projects that would have been planned otherwise that we could have done.
Yeah. And that can be part of Saturdays. It sounds like they're putting the slide together. Okay,
thanks.
Yeah, done.
Kind of along the same line of what Valerie said, I just needed a little more clarification to public, and just to make sure the note at the bottom, you got public improvement sales tax, public improvement fund, same thing, just different nomenclature. Is that correct?
It is.
Yeah, that's probably yes. Same
okay,
thing.
And yeah, that was my question And so, okay, I guess we'll get the answer Saturday. It's just, what is a public improvement fund? What's it go to? What has it been used for? Et cetera, et cetera. Thank you. Okay.
I mean, if you have the answers now, yes, I just didn't know if you, I don't see it in the slides.
So from the things that are usually budgeted within the public improvement sales tax are things like improvements to buildings and things that we own. So it's more of something to help us with our buildings, with sidewalks within in front of our buildings, things like that. I guess I don't know if Shane is here. He could help me out a little bit.
I don't know of anything.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think
it's how you pay for some of your annualized maintenance of your facilities. And yeah. So if there's a project that we need to do, the public improvement fund allowed you to have funds set aside to do just that. So you didn't have to go back into your capital outlay or do an emergency expenditure in order to pay for an improvement.
And that's not the only revenue source that fund has. It also gets funds from planning and zoning that go into that as well for maintenance on sidewalks and things like that. So it is a portion of the fund, but it's not the entirety of the fund, but we can break all that down on Saturday for you guys.
And,
so.
And it's not the largest portion
of
revenue for the fund.
Developmental fees are the largest portion.
Right.
It's substantially less than that, the development fees.
Did you have a follow-up, Valerie?
Couple of follow-ups. Yeah. The first one from planning and zoning, is that the fee in lieu for sidewalk?
I don't want to say for certain. I need to look into that. I know it's labeled as development fees in our accounting software. I don't really want to tell you what exactly it is because I don't know that off the top of my head.
But okay.
I can find out for you.
Maybe on the Saturday slides.
We will.
Put a slide together for it.
And just like for personal record keeping, since it wasn't on the slide, how much did you say was typically public improvement? There was a percentage that was now added to
2% of the 1% sales tax.
Thanks.
That's about $1 million, if that helps.
Okay.
So here's our use tax comparison. As you can see, I think basically what this demonstrates is that there's really no rhyme or reason for the way use tax comes in, so it makes it very unpredictable.
You can see this, the yellow one, this year I think we got quite a bit of use tax, and all the yellows are taller than the last year blue, so which says interpret. So, you know, when it started, we assume it's 10% of the total tax. But as we are getting quite a bit of use tax, we increase it to 17% this year will be in terms of 17% of the sales tax is around the use tax in terms of use tax. And on the previous slide, I didn't mention last time in February when we showed, we were talking about 2.5% down, but right now we are at the par from last year. So, and probably we have 8 home game. And you know, the sales tax data is 2 month lag, so we have only 8 months of data instead of 9. So we might be able to get a 1% increase from the last year. So,
and use tax is coming in above what we budgeted, so it is offsetting a bit of that sales tax shortfall that we are seeing. So that's kind of one of the reasons why we were able to narrow the gap as well. So
unlike last time, we are basically not in that panic mode that we are having a significant decrease. And these changes, so it is really hard. As that's why I, instead of having this forecast, Matthew, go to the next slide. So I kind of showed you how things can change 1 month to, depending on the weather. Most likely, because of colder winter, we have more your online shop, and it's hard to kind of predict human behavior, what is happening when.
Questions on use tax.
So if it's this unpredictable, how do you predict?
So basically we rely on our external sources. So we purchase some macroeconomic data, I don't want to blame them, but those data, they do it at a national level, and we are a small, not like medium-sized city. I don't know how much good those our sources are too.
Yeah, it has a lot. About as small as they get is Boone County.
Yeah.
And so they're predicting the increases for the county versus the city. And they should be sort of close because the city of Columbia is so much the biggest part of Boone County, basically. But a lot of the issue comes into play when you look at the use tax reception for the county. They receive a lot more use tax than we do, which I'm not sure how counties, you know, how what that association is with counties and use tax. I know for sure that the city's use tax collection, just in general in Missouri, is around 10% on average. The highest we had seen was Springfield, and they were about 16%, and we're on par to be at about 16% of our sales tax as well. And so it's just hard to predict.
Right. And I know this is something that I think you brought up in the February work session, mm-hmm. was that we saw more people who live in the county who maybe used to shop in town,
yes.
are now doing online, but we wouldn't capture their use tax because they're not residents of the city. They're
That's
residents
correct.
Of the county.
That's correct. And so the county is capturing that tax now.
Right.
So we did actually, when the year ends, we did actually check what is our forecast and what the actual is. I think last year when we checked, this is an incomplete year now, but last year when we checked, I think our total revenue was $64 million, and we were, I think, like 62. We were a little less even. So we are, you know, $2 million out of 64. Our error range is way within the range of error.
Yeah.
And you saw that on slide 9, how close we are even last year, rather than having a big, we don't want to have a big gap. That's what Matthew started in the beginning, that we want to have a revenue and expenditure at the same level. So big gap is not actually, sitting
right.
the money is not good. So we are actually going toward that direction. It's just the timing when we present, probably.
Yeah.
So I think this is another topic we'd like to kind of put some highlight. This one is the opposite, except 2 months this year, most of the time we are seeing decrease. But last year, I don't know how and why, after all the talk we have this in the council chamber, we saw a significant jump. You see that blue on April. We got a record marijuana tax last month. I don't know why that happened. Maybe I don't want to mention anything. But in short, we started this one 2 years back. We started based on other literature or other cities. 1 million around, we'll get a 1 million. But we end up getting 800 million.
800,000.
Sorry.
I was like, what?
That's a lot of money.
800,000.
In April alone. No, I'm just kidding.
And that's why we re-estimated, re-evaluated. Now we are forecasting around 600,000 for the upcoming budget. So,
yeah.
Can I ask, there was conversation about confidence in reporting those numbers. Are we doing any sort of validation on that?
We've been in talks with the county on what could we potentially do, but nothing, no action has been taken as of yet. I believe there is some sort of audit that probably needs to happen. I'm not sure what that looks like or how to even kick that off, but that is something we are definitely looking at, because it is very suspicious that you drop that much, 200,000 within a year.
Yeah, I think I'd be interested too what other cities are experiencing in Missouri, maybe reaching out to the Municipal League or others to see what they're seeing.
I know in the Kansas City area they've seen a big jump.
Yeah.
But it's hard to take Kansas City or St. Louis into account because they are both next. They both have states close to them that do not have that tax, and so people will cross that border.
Well, Illinois does. So
Kentucky
will be different. So it's more of the Kansas City side with Kansas City, Kansas.
But you still get Kentucky and Tennessee, which just has
that's true.
Medical that'll, and so there's still some sort of correlation of places that do not have recreation. But
I know the state is getting a lot of revenue in terms of marijuana tax as a state. They had a website where they published, but we cannot drill down to Colombia on that website. That's the problem. But state is, so I think we need to kind of check what is going on, because I think state, if everyone is making money, why we are going down?
I know some of it has something to do with a lot of our dispensaries having a doctor or some sort of medical physician on hand to be able to say, here's your medical card, which would affect this marijuana sales tax.
Yeah, Nick.
Thinking about the sales tax, the use tax, and the marijuana tax together, I think when we started getting a use tax, the idea was to capture what we were losing otherwise. The marijuana tax sort of felt like to me a bonus. You know, it's not. But I'm wondering about the three of them together and how they compare, how our tax income from these three compare to sales tax alone over a period of time previous to that. I'm guessing, based on what we're seeing, we haven't seen the kind of enhancement overall that we might have anticipated with use and marijuana tax being included.
I would say it probably kept us on the same trajectory, right, that we saw over the COVID years. I would say those two together probably helped us, you know, instead of a dip, because there would have been more of a dip without that use tax this year.
So it really just right-sized it more than enhanced it, per se.
I wouldn't necessarily plug the marijuana tax in with that. I would look at that as a separate lens. But I think with your use tax, you would see that it has kind of stabilized what we would have lost in sales tax. Mm-hmm.
I guess I just think the marijuana tax is a sales tax, and so
it is, but it's on a particular product, so I would not necessarily put that in with your regular sales tax.
Yeah, it's categorized as a other.
And it's called excise tax also, which is a little different
excise
from
tax.
Excise tax.
Okay.
But
we can definitely put a chart together so you can kind of see what that would look like if you.
When I'm looking at what has happened, what we've done historically, and what we're projecting, I think that might be helpful to see that. It would just, if we see these three together, and their impact over time.
I think when you look at your marijuana tax, you may want to look more at some of your other taxes that are come in, like the cigarette tax and it's more in line with those as opposed to the sales tax.
So we'll get in. We got a slide for that as well.
There's
a slide for that.
Next one. I think something that that makes me think of as well is when we're talking about the sales tax for marijuana, marijuana use tax and then the sales tax, those are all going in together. They don't have a separate expenditure. Like, we spend the use tax on these projects.
Right.
They all get bundled in together with the next ones as well, with the next slides. So it all goes general fund. It's not like we can itemize and say, well, this one is going towards this.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
This is kind of an answer to another question when asked regarding the what comes under the other local tax. So other local tax actually include cigarette tax, gross receipt tax on telecommunication. Union Electric is actually Ameren, Boone Electric, cable TV, gasoline tax, motor vehicle sales tax, and motor vehicle license tax, and marijuana tax. So marijuana tax, we reconcile, is a little different than the sales and use tax, because the sales tax and use tax has those percentage, 1% go to general fund, and other goes to transportation tax, but marijuana tax, we can use that entirely. So marijuana tax is a little different than the sales and use tax by definition. And you can see these rates are some of the things which are going down. And then we kind of consider that while estimating and projecting for the 2026.
Yeah, so your marijuana tax and your gasoline tax basically saved other local taxes. I don't know if you look at fiscal year 20 and we were at 10, we were slowly creeping up, but then we had the state increased the gasoline tax, and it increased, I believe it was 2 to 3 times, 2 to 3 fiscal years. I believe it was 5 to 6 cents. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think in 23, I think the state increased the tax, and at the same time, post-COVID, people start driving more, so which kind of pushed both.
Yeah.
And you can see the jump from 22 to 23 on the gasoline tax.
And then, as Deep said, we have three basically dying taxes, which are the cigarette, cable TV, and telecommunications, or the phone. So all three of those are things that will not come back.
Yeah, done.
Just for clarification, on the column it says annual changes. Is that only from
last
23
year.
To 24, last 2 years? Not an average, just
not
the
average,
last 2 years?
Just the last year.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
In the AMRNU E and the Boone Electric, those kind of operate like the city's pilot on our utilities, and they do kind of fluctuate year to year based off of weather, so they're not always as easily to project due to, you know, if weather patterns change, you get a mild
and
summer or a mild winter, things like that.
That Union Electric, which is down, it's hard to tell why it's down, basically. Whether it's a weather-related incident or when I was building this slide, I saw that and I double-checked because these are actual number. We went to our software and checked. This is true that we have around 800,000 less pilot coming to us. But I think this kind of exception, we don't anticipate that to continue. We kind of anticipate normal weather, so we bump it back to 2.9 million. These are really sometimes hard to predict this future.
Well, I think those would also be affected by more electrification of our buildings, you know, as more and more kind of trend to go away from doing natural gas heat.
Yeah, that could have a big impact on Ameren, for
but
sure.
I would think that, though, and efficiency probably will work hand in hand to make it either even or not so much of an increase as you would expect.
Right. Yeah, Valerie.
Yeah, maybe you already said it. I missed this on first read. You have an asterisk at the bottom for receipts.
Oh,
what is that calling out?
What? The gross receipts is abbreviated.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
We try to not put any abbreviation here.
Thanks for putting that at the bottom. I read it.
Siri also doesn't know.
Abbreviation. But missed the asterisk. Okay.
Siri is listening.
Ah. Sorry.
So we're asked where our money goes. And this, I think, is pretty telling as to how we spend the money out of the general fund. Of all of the funds, 70% of it, of our expenses, goes towards personal services, which includes salaries, paid leave, and other benefits. We are a personnel service-based organization, so it's not necessarily surprising that the biggest line that we have are the people that we employ that service our citizens. But about $96 million of our general fund is going to be paid towards personnel fees and services.
And can you just, for those listening at home, give us some examples of what is included then in the services and miscellaneous, the second biggest thing?
That's going to be contractual services, non-contractual services. Those are probably the two largest. So contractual services, one of the biggest would be the flock system. For the police, for policing, that would fall under contractual services. Anything that we would have a signed contract for that would be outside of a capital expense would be.
Okay. Yeah, Nick.
Those are essentially services that are being provided to us from
to the city from someone else, yes.
Outside our system, yeah.
So there's been, and this might be good for Saturday, we've been contacted by residents about the outsourcing of different things. So like vehicle maintenance or street pavement. I mean, some of the things that we also have staff do.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be good to have that comparison.
That'll be more relevant for some of your other funds, not necessarily the general fund.
So Well, I think the two examples that I think they were talking about were like public works, some of those projects. So yeah, difference between capital improvement sales tax and then general fund, just having that, that would be a good comparison
to
have.
I just want to make sure I understand what you would like to see are specific projects that fall under contractual services.
That would be a good example, but the questions we're getting more is on outsourcing like vehicle maintenance for projects as opposed to having our vehicle fleet maintenance office do the projects.
We'll have something for you on Saturday. We've okay. actually have a staff discussion on exactly what that looks like.
Okay, yeah. And I remember, I mean, this is part of the conversation that happened years ago with solid waste and trash collection, right?
Absolutely.
We were having to use temporary personnel because we couldn't fill the vacancy. So I think having those sort of answers would be good examples. And whether or not we've seen a decrease since going towards automated trash collection and having to use that would be a good, and that might be a part of the enterprise conversation on Wednesday.
Yes.
But it would be good to know. Don.
Again, just for clarification, the personnel services, that is only applies to those departments that are funded by the general fund, correct?
That's correct.
Correct.
Okay. So utilities, they wouldn't be covered under that?
No, this is everything today is
just general fund.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
So one of our favorite quotes that I know we've talked about before is, don't tell me where your priorities are. Show me where you spend your money and I'll tell you what they are. So obviously police, fire, public works and health are the organizations, the divisions, departments that we spend the most money out of the general fund on. So we just wanted to highlight
your priorities.
The priorities based on how the money is actually spent or allocated out.
And this is the total budget for those departments. This includes personnel as well as contractual services and all of that.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah, Betsy.
Can you, public works is out of the general fund?
It is, that's streets.
Okay.
So it's a portion.
It's funded in the general fund, but a portion of it, transportation, is funded by transportation sales tax. So,
Is the transportation sales tax goes into the general fund?
No, it pays for a portion of the work done by public works. So your transportation sales tax can go to pay for road improvements and things of that nature, and that's how it's used.
And also for bus drivers?
Mm.
That's not part of the transportation?
Yes.
So a portion of the transportation sales tax gets split three different ways. A portion of it gets transferred to the general fund to cover streets and sidewalks. A portion goes to transit to cover bus drivers and other operating expenses related to transit. Another portion goes to airport to cover airport operations as well. So those are transfers that come in, revenue transfers that come into the general fund for just the streets and sidewalks. The other ones get transferred to the transit fund and the airport fund.
So I think I got lost in that somewhere. Sorry.
Okay.
So the public works, the $16 million in public works that we spend, we are spending on streets, transportation.
The money you're on this slide right here, the public works that we're talking about on this slide right here is just streets and sidewalks.
Okay, and that comes out of the
general fund.
That gets paid out of the general fund. There's a transfer that comes into the general fund from transportation sales tax to cover those costs.
Okay, so are there bus drivers in here somewhere?
No, they're in their own fund called transit. They're an enterprise fund. We'll talk about them on Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think it's, I'm assuming too, Jim, it's not probably 100% covered by the transportation sales tax coming in. So there is still general fund sales tax dollars that are going towards public works for roads, and sidewalks.
Well, I mean, but a big portion of your general fund, it has outside funding other than your general fund revenue. So I'll put something together for Saturday to kind of look at what that looks like. But outside of public safety, just about everyone else has a majority, half to majority of their expenses are paid for through some other means other than the general fund.
And I know you have that later on in some of the slides about some of the funds that come in, for instance, grants for health. So,
yes.
Yeah.
All right. This is where we're going to talk about intergovernmental fees. This is something that we get questions on a lot, so we thought it would be a good idea to highlight some of what goes into that category, especially in the general fund, where that's the fourth largest category of revenue that we have. The biggest part of the revenue that comes in there, about $14 million in the 26 budget, is from G&A fees. G&A stands for general and administrative fees, and these are fees that we charge to recover the cost to operate city departments or divisions within the general fund that serve kind of a general or an administrative purpose, but they don't generate their own revenue. So we bill the cost to operate those departments out to other funds or other departments in the city outside of the general fund to cover that cost or a portion of that cost.
Do you understand the need for that?
I think an example might be helpful right here.
A good example would be your utilities department. They don't have an accounting. They don't have accounting. They don't have HR. And so to pay for, because the general fund is paying for that in whole, originally, those fees are reimbursed to the general fund for providing those type of services to those other funds.
It goes back to that first question about legal.
That's true about legal and, IT.
Administrative.
Yeah.
Just keep going. We'll get there. So there's also a few items that are direct billed to specific departments. So one example of that is airport safety, which is a division in the police department that gets billed out to the airport fund. There's also credit card fees that are charged out directly to different departments that are paid for within the general fund. And then there's also a portion of G&A fees that recover the cost for HR in the general fund and payroll, and those are charged on a per employee basis. So a fund that has more employees would pay a bigger piece of that cost.
Yeah, Jackie.
Again, just trying to clarify. So each department creates their own budget, correct, and submits kind of what they're budgeting. And within that budget, they have to budget for city services of pay. No. Okay, see, that's why I'm asking this question.
No, we take care of those. Once all of the departments and divisions submit their budgets, they just submit like their operating budget. So it would be travel training, their contractual services, some of those others. Then we take all of their budgets and we recalculate fees based on their budgets and their personnel numbers.
And you take that directly from the general fund, not from that department? Or because it sounds like you're saying that the department has to pay the city back for those services?
So one way to look at it, so when you, these are accounting issues basically. So in private accounting and public accounting are different because public accounting has funds. So revenue collected by a certain fund has to stay within that fund. While if you're on the private sector, all of their money can be commingled, so you wouldn't have to worry about providing a HR service or finance service for someone or some department or division that is outside of your normal operation. And so that is the main reason for having a transfer for these other different pieces, these administrative pieces, because these other funds do not have administrative departments. Those are all in the general fund.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
it
is very difficult, and that's what makes private and public accounting so different. And usually, if you are doing public accounting, you can do any type of accounting, and it's because of this, because you have to understand those funds and that fund accounting method.
Okay, so it's a pot of money in the general fund that covers the G&A, and that money doesn't have to be transferred from that department for those administration issues. It just already exists.
Matthew, can you go to the next slide? And I think it'll help a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so we maybe should have put this slide closer to the beginning, but these are the departments that we recover their costs in G&A fees. So there's the law department in the general fund. We only recover the cost for the city councilor division of the law department. And then finance, we recover the whole cost other than business license. For city council, we recover your admin division costs, but we don't recover costs for boards and commissions. For city clerk, we also recover the admin cost, but not the election cost. And then we recover the whole cost for the city manager's office and human resources. So these are all admin departments that are, all of their budget is within the general fund, but we provide services for the entire city, all the funds in the city. And so we then calculate how do we recover the cost for these admin functions in a way that's fair for everybody, so that everybody is paying their piece. And so we do charge, like the utility funds, we charge the enterprise funds. They transfer money into the general fund to recover part of the cost to operate these departments that are listed. Does that make more sense?
Well, that's kind of what I was saying, because we're talking about recovering funds and we're talking about transferring funds, and so that was my question. Are these departments transferring funds into the general revenue fund to cover these administrative?
Yes, the enterprise funds and the other funds outside of the general fund do transfer money to the general fund through fees to cover part of the cost to operate these departments.
So essentially we're billing our own departments?
Just the ones outside the general fund. We do also take into account the departments within the general fund that use these services. So we're not, you know, taking all of the money from the enterprise funds to cover these costs. That's why we only recover a portion from outside the general fund.
And Nick.
And the way I understand this is essentially, if this were not true and the enterprises were all independent or private, they would be paying on their own for legal, finance, HR, et cetera. And so we're simply providing that as a service to them. It feels odd because it's within the same organization, but that's essentially how it works.
Yes.
Right. So I went back and looked at where the revenue comes from. So that revenue that's coming from those enterprise funds and otherwise is the intragovernmental revenue in 16.5 million, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That is a... Public Accounting 101, I guess. So we can definitely go back over that again, because I know it can be confusing thinking about it, especially when you say you're paying yourself. But if you think about it in the terms of Water and Light doesn't have a CFO, they don't have a CEO, they don't have a HR department. All they do is Water and Light. And so the general fund provides those other services for Water and Light. And so for us to be able to provide those services, they pay a fee to the general fund.
Yeah, Nick.
And again, the way I've understood it is this just makes each of those more efficient.
That's correct.
They don't have to do that. And so the revenues that they do have, they can go toward other things. It's not going to cost them as much.
Yeah.
To use our finance department to manage their finances as it would
and
take
if they
did
own.
That outside that.
That is 100% correct.
To me, it's another argument for owning your own utilities and so forth. But
yeah,
is there a way to provide data that shows that in any way?
No, I mean, not unless you looked at like Boone County or something, who pays a CFO, who pays HR department, and those expenses are going to be way higher than the G&A fees that our utilities pay.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
I think one question. Oh, sorry, Don, go ahead.
Excuse me. I think, well, what I'm pretty sure I understand what we're doing, but I think what might help provide some clarity is take one of these, let's say human resources. We have one human resources that covers the entire city. Look at and just provide a breakout just for that one department. You don't have to do it for all of them. And say human resources, their budget for 25 is X. And then Y amount of that comes from utilities, comes from water, you know, Z comes from electric, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Break it down and then say this is how we, you know, apportion it out, because again, they're providing for the entire city staff. And so that way utilities and the other departments don't have to. So like I said, just pick one that covers everything, provide kind of a breakout, and I think would provide some clarity for a lot of people.
Sure, we can have that for you on Saturday as well. That will give you an example.
Should we order lunch for Saturday? Because there's a lot of things getting rolled into Saturday.
So I think also, you know, from used to have to budget for GNA fees, I think one thing that would be good to know is how you just talked about kind of like the cost breakdown. I think, you know, it's kind of a mystery. The departments are just told what their GNA fee, you know, in their head. They're just told this is how much to budget for intergovernmental transfers and fees. So I think that will help probably open it up for staff as well to be like, oh, okay, that's what it goes
to. Yeah, we have a whole calculation we can
We do have some pretty detailed handouts that we have that we provided especially to Water and Light before, specifically for their Water and Light board when they have questions about how those fees are calculated. But that is something that we provide internally always to departments when they request it.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to know. Thank you.
I hate to even go to the next slide because it's on a whole nother fee. There is another separate fee called public communication fees. And so one of the in-house agencies that we do have is Creative Services and Marketing that does a lot of our campaigns, marketing, graphic design, website, social media management, video production, event services. And then also the contact center that helps be a centralized source of information for our citizens. So these are two additional departments, divisions that we do charge other departments for their services. And so this is labeled as the public communication fee. So, if you go to the next slide. So creative services and marketing fees recover the cost of the division in the general fund, but because it does not generate its own revenue, each department is then charged based on the percent of that department's share of total materials, supplies, travel, training, services, and miscellaneous budget for the whole city. This is another one that we can show how we can do a calculation to show you exactly how it's calculated out. We can bring that as well on Saturday, so you'll have an example of how those are figured as well. So one of the big examples is the cost to do the City Source newsletter, since that is designed in-house, but then billed to utilities.
Yeah, Valerie.
So for this one, do individual departments know how much they're essentially sending for, I guess, each of their needs for creative services? How does that, so, you know, the other one, there's probably a pretty formulaic approach. And
there is on this one as well. And okay, we'll bring in a complete example for that one as well.
Interesting.
So that we can show you all exactly how those public communication fees are calculated out.
Okay.
Then the contact center, theirs are based on call referral histories and the last five completed years. Most of the calls received by the contact center are referred to a specific department. However, a small subset falls into general utility category and then is divided up to be billed to utilities based on established percentages. So we'll establish all of that for you as well and show you how those are calculated out. And the data that we use to calculate those when I bring back the one on the GNA fees. We'll have examples for both of those.
So not on this one, but on the previous slides related to the public communication fees, I would just like remind us that, you know, the last 2 years, one of the big priority areas that council has asked of the city manager and staff is help us with engagement, help us with communications, outreach, things that to show what it is that the city is doing. And so I don't know how you want to kind of form that, but I think, you know, as we get into the Ready for Fiscal Year 26 budget, talking about the impacts of those investments that we've made to see, you know, are we seeing an improved in engagement and in people attending and coming and being involved in the city and what's our projections going forward?
All right.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Valerie.
I'm interested too, because a lot of the changes that we made to that, it seems like it may come from different parts of the fund. So I think, you know, we have the community connectors, which may use part of this, but is completely separate from this. You know, I think we have a lot of new elements that come from different parts of the fund. So some of the programs we asked for might not get budgeted out of here, correct, or perhaps this budget increased due to the creation of an entirely new program that some percentage pays into this too.
Yeah, my assumption was not that it was all from this fee.
Yeah, I guess it would be interesting to hear what parts of this do and how that grew due to the requests we made.
Okay, so then there's another fee, the facilities fees. So this is for building maintenance, utilities, and custodial services. Maintenance and custodial hours are tracked by hours throughout each of the building and the staff, and then averaged over 4 years to estimate the percentage of time spent in each building. Fees are then charged to departments per square foot using each department's approximate square footage in each building that the maintenance and custodial departments service. And then utility costs for city buildings are also recovered from departments based on a square footage basis. So we do have a map of the buildings, and thank you to Public Works for helping us update that. We're still working on getting everyone. You know, every time someone moves within the within City Hall or moves to a new building, for example, when we took over Turner Jones building, we had to readjust, but we also had to realize that we now needed more, because we had owned more city buildings, so we may need more custodial services, we would have more hours cleaning, and so Public Works, Shane and Dawn and Cindy do a great job of tracking the hours and making sure that we know exactly how many hours that it takes for custodial staff and building maintenance to work on our buildings throughout the city. But I can also include an example of how the facility fees are calculated with the other ones that we have already on for the examples.
Yeah, Betsy.
Why aren't all of these fees included under the general and administrative fees? Why are you splitting all these out? Don't split out the law.
The general and administrative fees that I talked about first, those make up the biggest part. Those are about $14 million of that $16 million. Those go into the general fund, not assigned to a specific department. The creative services fees, sorry, the public communications fees and the facilities fees each get attributed to the department that's actually doing that work. That's why we break them out. Does that answer your question?
So the facility fees go back to Public Works or building maintenance?
Oh, not to the general fund.
Well, it is the general
fund. It is part of the general fund.
But those specific
departments within the general fund.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
This is accounting.
This is, well, now, it might be accounting, but I think I have to think about it, or maybe DeCarlin can explain it to me, or maybe I need to figure out what I don't understand.
No, I think they can provide a better layout to kind of just show you exactly what it is, so you can kind of see it graphically.
Yeah,
I think
I think what they're saying is, like, going back to, like, the general fees, like, when I'm sorry, I keep picking on utilities, but when utilities is billed for their portion of human resources, that goes into the general pot, and that money could actually then wind up paying the Carlin salary, okay? Whereas the facility fee, when utilities is billed for something that a facility fee, that goes directly to Public Works.
Right.
Is that it?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I just need a non-accountant to explain it.
Okay, streets and engineering. So we're kind of, what we're doing here is just kind of showing what makes up streets and engineering and what its primary source of revenue comes from. So this is different than all the fees you've seen before. Streets and engineering, a large portion of their expenses gets covered by the transportation sales tax that comes to the general fund through a transfer every year. The streets division provides maintenance of roadway services, winter weather response, emergency response, and other for weather conditions, and vegetation controls for public right of way. And then the engineering portion, they do the design, contract administration, and construction inspection of capital improvement projects for all the public works departments. So those two divisions, the expenses that they accumulate occur in the general fund, and there's a transfer that comes from transportation sales tax to cover a large portion of those expenses. Is there any questions on that?
No.
Okay, moving on to the next one. So public health and human services, again, this is another category of expenses, division that is in the general fund, but their costs are not strictly funded by local sales tax. They get a portion of their funding, about 33%, from Boone County. And a good portion also comes from various federal, state, and county grants. And PHHS provides services for health, safety, well-being of all city and county residents and visitors, and is also aware of vital records, immunization, disease control, and women, infant, and children nutrition programs are housed, as well as animal control.
DeCarlin, would you like to, while we're on this one, talk about what the department's doing for expected revenue decline, and you know what you've said, you've updated council a little bit, but I think just maybe have Rebecca come up.
Rebecca, you want to come up and kind of talk about some of the things you've worked on? Yes, ma'am.
You can come.
I'm right here, Rebecca. That's true. I should have planned a little better. So, we've had some recent funding cuts, as you all are aware. One of the bigger ones came in March, and that was our emergency, our ELCED and our ELC community health worker program. So those were COVID dollars. One of them was going to be funding our building remodel project. So we've just put that project on hold. That was about $500,000. The other one funded our community health worker program. So those are three community health workers that work with individuals in the community on their chronic diseases. So those three positions will end on September the 30th. And two of the three persons have been placed in other positions within our department. So we will be ceasing that program. We had some funding that was temporarily suspended. That was our HIV prevention dollars. Thankfully, they reinstated that about 8 days later. Our public health emergency preparedness money, which is funds that we've had since 9/11, instead of the usual amount for our contract, we were given 50% of the contract. So what we've done is retooled our budget to pay for 100% of the program for 6 months. And we should know from the state early October whether or not the remaining part of that grant will be funded. And that program covers the cost of our emergency preparedness planner and our public information specialist. We also had some changes to our home visiting program. That program is three employees, and they provide home visiting services, which are really looking at improving birth outcomes and reducing child abuse and neglect. And that program, the funding from DESE is ending September the 30th. And we were notified Friday that the state is going to give us 2/3 of the money starting October 1st that we originally had from DESE. So right now everything is stable-ish. We've received as many cuts as we were anticipating. But I mean, that can change at any minute. So the biggest things are the community health worker program will be eliminated September the 30th. And then also as a cost savings, as you're aware, for the first time since 2009, we're not going to be doing flu shots in schools within Boone County. That was a pretty staff-heavy program because we had to hire temporary nurses to provide those immunizations. We are still going to be doing flu vaccines and COVID vaccines in our department. We'll still do comfort clinics because we're really the only entity in town that does that type of clinic for sensory needs. And we'll still do some community-based clinics, but we will not be going into public schools for the first time since H1N1.
Any questions for Rebecca? Yeah, Valerie.
Yeah. Do we have any strategies to reach out to the schools to maybe communicate what services we have in office to try and draw some of those people in that might be missing services they used to have?
You mean for, are you thinking about immunizations?
Yes.
Okay.
So we
do. Part of what we'll do as we get closer to the beginning of the flu season, we'll have a press release that talks about when our clinics are, our community-based clinics, that you can also come to our office and we'll be scheduling appointments, but also some of the other places in the community where you can seek immunizations for yourself or your child. We have talked with our school partners. They're aware of this change. To be honest, though, we have also seen a pretty big drop in the number of kids who have received their vaccines at schools in the last 5 years. There's a decrease in vaccination rates as a nation, and then locally we've seen a decrease in the number from like 7,500 a couple of years ago to 4,700 this past year. So there's been a decline. Now, that's not necessarily bad because there's also been an increase in access points to receive immunizations. Now you can get them at a pharmacy. That hasn't always been the case. So there have been other locations where people have been able to access vaccines where they had not been able to previously.
Do we have access to like data and statistics?
I can email it, yes.
Vaccination.
I just pulled this for the Board of Health last week. So we have a report that shows what the flu vaccination, it's like a 5-year look at flu vaccines in Boone County. And then we also have data that shows how many vaccines our nurses gave in public schools.
And it includes the data from other sources like
as much as is available. So what's tricky about vaccine data is that the centralized source to report vaccine data is ShowMeVax, correct, Trina?
Yes.
And not every medical provider that provides vaccinations inputs their data into ShowMeVax. So the state data for vaccine rates, they're using ShowMeVax. Probably the cleanest data is the data that you get from a school nurse, because they get the actual shot record when a child enters kindergarten and then at a few other touch points. But it's the best that we can do with the way data is collected.
Yeah, Betsy.
Rebecca, I just want to thank you for, I know you didn't come in here as a budget director, but it certainly sounds like you are for the Health and Human.
Well, actually, Michelle is, but she's home with a baby, so I'm doing the best I can.
Well, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
And I know it's difficult to try and figure out what of all of these programs can be cut with the least impact on actually public health, so thank you. Or thank her when she gets back from
this
baby.
She might be watching, knowing her.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Any other questions?
No. Again, thank you, and sorry.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, Matthew.
Next.
Yep.
Okay, so here are the changes for the fiscal year 26 budget. As we explained earlier, we will not be making a transfer from the Public Improvement Fund or to the Public Improvement Fund from the General Fund. We have four parks and two airport safety officers that will become sworn police officer positions. And so both of these parks and the airport will become a part of the normal patrol.
Were they not?
I'm saying that correct? No, they were actual park rangers and airport safety officers.
But they were
a different budget.
They were uniform police officers, so this just kind of makes it more aligned with operations.
Okay.
Because they all have to be post certified, and under state guidelines, all post certified employees have to be supervised by the police chief.
Can I ask for you to clarify, what does that mean by will become part of normal patrol? Like, if called up, all of a sudden they'll be responding to an incident? What does that mean?
So the catalyst for all of this originally was exactly what the city manager talked about. Anyone who's sworn, who is post-certified that I commission, I really need to supervise. And so that wasn't the case. And under Chief Jones, we started transitioning the airport public safety officers and the park rangers under the police department because it was a little bit scattered before that. So we got that done. In the meantime, we've tried to staff those positions and keep them as park safety officers and airport public safety officers, which are separate. They're not in our pension. They don't make the same as a police officer. They're in a separate system. And we really honestly hope we would get a lot of interest from retirees because since those positions are in loggers, you could actually retire from the department, come back and work in one of those jobs as a retiree. We just haven't gotten that level of interest. In fact, we haven't been able to hire a park ranger. So we have one. And then with the airport, I won't steal Chief Schaefer's thunder, and I certainly do not want to talk about fire department operations, and I should not be supervising fire operations, which I am right now. So right now, airport public safety includes the police aspect of that job, the fire aspect of that job, and then the operations aspect, which is a whole lot of FAA regulations that are super complicated. So he and I have been in the process of kind of deconstructing that so that police can do police stuff, firemen can do fireman stuff, and then operations will be kind of a separate job probably down the road. So I'm going to move police out of that equation, and we're just going to supervise and oversee police, so security operations at the airport. No more firefighting for police officers. It's not really our thing. So there'll be folks down there that will continue to do those jobs. We're just basically going to turn airport and parks into what we term a specialized assignment. So it'll be like a school resource officer or a detective or a traffic unit officer, something of that nature. It'll be a specialty assignment that officers will apply to per the union contract, and they'll be selected. So it'll be a little bit easier for us to staff. We're just having trouble keeping up with staffing in those areas, and we have one park ranger, and we should have four.
Does that mean, Jill, that that they will then be in your pension system?
Yes.
And paid what the rate of an officer or whatever is?
Yes.
Okay.
And so our plan is to basically staff this. Right now we're trying to do all those, the airport specifically. Parks is pretty easy because we're just going to have, you know, regular police officers that say, hey, I want to put my name in the hat. I want to apply to be, have the park ranger assignment. And so our plan loosely is to geographically assign them north and south to parks. That will be what they do all the time. They'll do trails. They'll do special events in the parks, all those things of that nature. With the airport, same thing, just we'll staff down at the airport. We think we can do it with four officers because we do 12-hour shifts. If that adjusts at some point, we might have to play with that a little bit. But with adding flights to the airport, we thought we were going to be able to maybe have some time early in the morning. But really, we learned recently that TSA starts screening at like 4:30 in the morning for that first flight. So we'll probably just stay on the 12-hour shifts. But yes, they'll be in regular pension. It'll just be like any other specialized assignment. And so if something did happen and we needed to pull people for something in an emergency, they would be, right now, they're trained just like we are. All these folks still go through our police academy. And they go through our field training, which is a whole other side aspect of this that has pluses and minuses for those folks. But this way, they'll just be part of the whole police organization. They won't be kind of outside, but inside, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Nick, and then Valerie.
So I don't know if this is a question for you or for Matthew. I assume this has a fiscal impact then. We're talking about that it costs more to have a sworn officer rather than what we've had before. It's not just simply a matter of recategorizing and reorganizing where people are, right?
Yes. Actually, we ran the math, and Lisa's going to tell me what the numbers are because we ran it, and I don't remember. It is slightly more because their base pay is more.
Right.
And then there's obviously the pension obligation. But what we're really just doing is adding in we had originally asked in this budget cycle for two more airport public safety officers. In the meantime, Chief Schaefer and I started talking about, hey, we really need to start pulling this apart. I shouldn't have anything to do with firefighting. He doesn't want to have anything to do with police work. We agreed on that. So we started trying to pull this apart. So there is a little bit of a cost, but it's not astronomical.
Yeah, I just was assuming that. Just wanted to clarify it. I assume we'll see the numbers.
Yeah. Under 12,000 per position, yeah.
I mean, I know we would see the figure sooner.
Absolutely.
Or later. This slide is about NDIs specifically for personnel, and I assume there's a cost to each of these. So, yeah, just wanted to be sure about that.
No problem.
Clarify that. Yeah,
yeah, Valerie.
Yeah, you said something. I think I'm missing the nuance of this.
Sure.
A little bit. It went straight over my head. So you were talking about hoping to reach retirees for the park position because it was in loggers. What's the difference between, I guess, pension programs there? And is there something that makes that eligible for a police retiree?
So once you retire out of our police pension, you cannot come back into another position that is covered by the police pension. It's the same way with fire. So you can work a logger's pension funded job, which is what parks and the airport are currently. We're just not getting really any interest in those positions. And frankly, we've had some folks that we've hired in who initially said, I think this is what I want to do. And then they realize, well, I'm going through the police academy. I'm going to be carrying a gun and a taser and going through all this training. Same thing as a CPD officer. Why would I make less money when I could go and work the contracted rate? I think the starting pay is $60,008. That's not what it is for a park ranger. So I think a lot of them get into it and go, I'm kind of doing the same training. I'm wearing the same uniform. Why would I not just go be a CPD officer? So we've just not gotten a lot of interest in it.
Okay. So did you change that? So by part of the normal patrol, what you were explaining to Mayor Buffalo before, did you change that to not be separate?
Yeah, so if this goes through, our plan would be to basically create another specialty unit within the police department, which would be park rangers or airport police, and they would wear the exact same uniform, same everything. It's just like a school resource officer. That's their assignment.
I think I got the connection now. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry, it is a little bit complicated.
No, I didn't understand the difference between the pensions and why they would be disclosed.
Yes.
Thank you, Jill.
Are there any questions on the new positions that we're proposing?
Do you want to walk through them
for
us?
And so most of those are actually pretty much germane to either public safety or police or public health. So we have two divert officers, two divert personnel, which will be in the health department. We have one code enforcement specialist, which will be for part of housing, neighborhood services. Two sworn police officers, those are the ones we talked about for the airport. As opposed to being eight airport safety officers, we're just gonna hire two police officers. Then we have two civilian investigators, which is internal affairs.
one civilian investigator, which is in criminal investigations, and then one property evidence technician for the police department.
Yeah, Don.
Just to provide me a little more specifics, the most of these are self-explanatory. The code enforcement specialist, I'm assuming that's for either like short-term rentals, rental inspections. Is that what?
It's adding another staff for the
neighborhood services. Okay, for that, because of,
yes.
Okay, the increased need. And then specifically the two divert positions in public health.
Mm-hmm.
Could you flesh that out
so
for me?
Actually, I'll let Rebecca come back up. But you know, one of the biggest things that we know in our community is the need for supporting our mental health.
Okay.
And so Divert's done a great job of doing that. It's been one of those things that we've seen actually a lot of utilization. So it's just an opportunity to add more personnel.
So the Divert program really originated, it was an idea Judge Nose had a few years ago. And he saw a need to have social services employees in the municipal court environment because a lot of the things he was seeing people come before his bench really had more to do with if they had assistance from somebody for these other basic needs or to stabilize their whatever it is that was causing them to be before him, they would not continually come before his bench. So that's kind of where Divert came from originally. So it started with one social services specialist who works with the municipal court, police and fire, animal control and environmental health, and housing and neighborhood services. So it's really kind of the intermediary between the individual and the public safety department that they're having interactions with. So we have two Divert staff right now and a community health worker that moved to the Divert program mid-fiscal year because we wanted to add a little bit more support to that program. So my assumption is that one of those two is the community health worker that was moved mid-fiscal year, and then the other is a supervisor for that program. Those individuals are almost exclusively in the field, and they really need the support of a direct supervisor who's working with them, making sure that they have what they need for field safety and for follow-up with the clients. Our goal with Divert is to reduce the number of people who have repeat encounters with public safety. So if police or fire refer somebody to Divert and then they never see them again, that is a success of the program.
How many Divert officers or positions do we currently have?
We have two social services specialists and one community health worker. And right now they report directly to a manager. But they really need more direct support because that program can only continue to grow. They're seeing good successes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Not on that part. Thank you.
No. Thank you, Rebecca. Yeah, Valerie, you had a question on this.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for the code enforcement specialist. I know that's something that I've really hoped for. Does that bring us to five code enforcement specialists now? Is that right?
I believe that'd be a total of eight with the additional one. Is that correctly?
Okay. Wow. Okay, I can't count. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Other questions on this? I think one thing that might be useful for maybe Saturday or even it's just anecdotally, like, you know, to Nick's point, these are the new decision items that are approved. And I know that forecasting looking forward into this year, worried about revenue, you know, not being as much as expenditures. So I think it would be useful for you to also talk about the NDI's, the request. Because I imagine that every department has things that they need to do in order to meet the goals that the community has set for them. And so I think, you know, just I don't know what the dollar amount is to these additional ones here, but I think it's a good, I mean, to show that we are not just willingly saying yes to everything, every whim that's coming out there, and that we know that there's a growing need in all of our departments. I think everyone out there, especially when you think of public safety and health and public works, while we have a lot of that fund going towards there is obviously conversations to have about how do we continue to fill the need that's there.
Do you want to see the number of requested NDIs versus?
I think it'd be a good just to show exercise in that we are, you are being frugal with our budget.
Absolutely.
I think the other thing to include in this, and I'm not, I know we're still in negotiation with our represented groups, and I don't think we've come to any, I don't know if we've had any finalization on those, but it'd be interesting to know in the projections, this proposed budget, are you including increases to wages for our employees? And, you know, what can you share about that?
Yeah, so we are, but because we're still in the process of negotiations, no, but I think it would be kind of premature to put that number out right now.
Okay.
But as we get closer, we definitely will be something that we can bring forward and to talk to the council about.
Okay. Other questions? And so the point of these work sessions, are these really information only for us to ask our questions for things that you have coming forward, but we're going to have two more work sessions on this and then obviously all of our public hearings. When can we expect a proposed budget coming to us for first read?
So the first read for the public, for the budget will be August 2nd. But we plan to have something for you after Saturday. What we wanted to use these meetings were to make sure that you all understood the budget and had everything that you all wanted within the budget before we put out that initial version. And so that way, moving forward, it would only be changes that may be made during those public hearings or things that you all may have heard or something like that, so we can have a good base structure for the budget.
All right, any questions from council, knowing that we're gonna come back together again on Wednesday? Anything for this? All right, well, thank you for this. I think it's been very informative and useful. DeCarlin, do you need anything else from us? There's just one more slide that says the city. So looking ahead. DeCarlin, is there anything else that you need?
Only if there's any additional questions that council members may have.
No, and I'll just make note. I think what I heard for, especially for Saturday, is bringing up the change from fiscal year like 22-23 to current with vacancies and filled roles. Or FTEs, examples from the public improvement fund uses. I have also on here the breakdown of G&A and communications fees. And yeah, I think those are the main ones I had to
go with. Mayor Bethlow, I'm gonna go real quick just over the list that I wrote down.
Okay.
So I make sure that I have everyone's needs.
Perfect.
And wants. So I have lists of from departmental cuts that were suggested to us from the FY25 budgets on into the FY26, employee staff and staffing situation, vacancies, retention over the past 5 years, how that commitment to our employees has looked historically. Projects under the Public Improvement Fund, just some ideas of what those have been in the past since we're not going to be doing that transfer from the general fund to the Public Improvement Fund. Other communities, marijuana sales tax, how they're, what they're looking like. The history of sales tax, use tax, and marijuana tax, and what that has looked like as a grouping together kind of on one slide so that you can see those a little bit more easily, what those totals are over maybe the past 5 years. What outsourcing of vehicle maintenance has looked like, or other outsourcing on contractuals. Other projects that are listed perhaps under contractual services. The examples from the calculation of fees on G&A fees, public communication fees, and the facilities fees, and then the NDI lists.
Well, you got more than I did, so thank you for remembering all the things that we said.
I did have a comment for the Public Improvement Fund. So it looks like we've been mainly using capital improvement sales tax for a lot of the activities, but we received about $1.2 million and developmental fees from the forum project in 25. And so we're looking at using about $121,000 for the Fairview and Chapel Hill in 26. And I think that's the only one they have in right now. We'll have the information for you on Saturday, as well as a 5 years worth of projects or whatever for the for the public improvement sales, public improvement fund, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
So just for informational purposes, I believe Wednesday we're going to talk more about the enterprise funds and each one of those. So just so you're aware, kind of what the target is on okay. Wednesday.
You have a question?
Yeah, I had a question about outsourcing. It sounds like we have a couple of broad categories for outsourcing. I wonder if we have, if you could provide a breakdown on like outsourcing for plans and research for planning. Not the planning department, but it seems like we spend a bit on outsourcing for written plans for all of our departments. It would be nice to understand where that comes from.
Are you talking about like the comprehensive plans that we've done for different
right.
departments?
So, okay. And also for ones that are council requested. So we've requested plans that essentially went to contract. So I think of
the pedestrian safety.
Pedestrian safety. Another one would be the traffic corridor study. I think we'll also, it sounds like we're also going to contract for that. Understanding where those go and when we contract for them and why would be helpful for me, particularly as a person who requests plans occasionally.
And I think probably maybe it might help to send a message which ones you're thinking of too for that, just because I don't know if you'll get it all in time for Saturday, but just have that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you wanting the actual like status of the plans or how much they were budgeted for, where they're budgeted?
I think since the purpose of the work session is budget related. Budget, just stick with
those
are, the budget.
What those yeah. look at like yeah. in cost, what is actually in the contractual lines.
Yeah.
Right, I'm specifically looking for a breakdown of where our money for contracted services go. And okay. that's
we'll have a list.
Contracted service.
Any other comments? All right, well, thank you, appreciate it, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
All right,
thank you. 42.